Okay, good afternoon. Welcome back to the afternoon kollel. As we do every week, we want to express our gratitude to the Froelich Financial Group for sponsoring the kollel. This week's sponsors, Avram and Madeline Friedman, in memory of their parents, Israel and Adassa, and Robert and Rhoda, whose neshamas should have an aliyah. Thank you very much for your sponsorship. Also, I draw your attention, every single year we have an event to celebrate our learning together, all that the Dr. Yitzhak Belazon Beis Medrash of Boca Raton Synagogue contributes to the community at large, and to enable all that Torah learning. So whether you're a member of BRS, and I would argue even all the more so if you're not a member of BRS, but benefiting from and enjoying the Torah learning opportunities, please join us for that special evening. This year, we'll be hosting Rav Moshe Weinberger, one of the most inspiring personalities, figures of our time, the rabbi of Eish Kodesh in Woodmere, and head of a new yeshiva in Kollel, teaching Panemius HaTorah. He'll be here Monday night, January 28th. There are all the lists to join the host levels. And I hope we can see everyone's name on here at some level. And even whatever level it is, no judgment of the level. But if you're appreciative of the afternoon kollel, the shiurim, the programs, and you want to be part of the community of people supporting the Torah learning in the community, please consider joining one of the levels. If you're listening to the shiur online and you enjoy the shiurim that Boca Raton Synagogue and the Beis Medrash provide, please consider joining. Okay, commercial over. If you fast-forwarded, you could rejoin us. So, we began a few weeks ago, last week. We began last week studying the new topic, the Shas Sugya of Hamotzi Mechaver Olav Araya. We said the Shas topic, Hamotzi Mechaver Olav Araya, has several names. We refer to it as Hamotzi Mechaver means possession is, in halacha, not 9/10 of the law, possession is 10/10 of the law. Whoever has possession, in a case of doubt or conflict, when there's no supporting evidence to extract the money, the default is that whoever has possession is the owner. We refer to this concept or principle in several names. Cheskes Mamon, Muchzak, whoever's Muchzak, whoever has possession. Chassam Sofer, we'll see, calls it Netshuva Chazaka Koma Shetachas Yad Adam Shelo. There's a Chazaka that whatever a person holds, whatever a person has, belongs to them. So we began to discuss the origin and where we learn this from. And then we're going to get into the Chakira. So just to review where we were last week. We saw on page number one, the Gemara in Baba Kama, the Mishnah in Baba Kama, that told us when the case of a Shor Shonaga Chasapara, an ox gores a cow, and the fetus of the cow is found next to the cow, and we don't know, was the fetus killed, did the fetus die before the goring, or was the fetus also a casualty of the goring? Was the one who owns the ox responsible not only for the cow, but also for the fetus or for the calf? And we don't know. So Sumcha said, Yachloku, divide. Whereas the Chachamim said, no. Motza Mechaver Olav Araya. In order to extract the money from the owner of the ox, the owner of the cow would have to have evidence that in fact, the fetus was killed by the ox as well. Where do we learn the principle? So the Gemara in Baba Kama, Daf Mem Vav Mebeis, page number two, learns it from the following. The pasuk says, "Mi bal dvarim, whoever the bal dvarim," Moshe is giving instructions how they should set up a judicial system. So, whoever are the plaintiffs, whoever are the litigants, yigash aleim should come to you. Yigash. So, what is it that they're bringing? Yigash should bring it to you. What are they bringing? A sandwich? A latte? What are they bringing to these judges? So, the Gemara concludes, what they're bringing is yigash raya aleim. You're bringing evidence. So you see from this pasuk that Hamotze Mechaver Olav Araya, it is on the plaintiff to prove, to bring the overwhelming evidence in order to extract money from the defendant. The plaintiff has to bring evidence. What is he bringing? What's a yigash? What's he bringing to the judges? Raya, he's bringing evidence. Maskel Ravashi Halam Alikros Haru. So the Gemara interrupted and said, what do I need a pasuk? You just quoted a pasuk to tell me that it's on the plaintiff to bring evidence in order to extract money from the defendant. What do I need that pasuk? It's a svara. It's logical. To give like Eva also the beasya. Whoever has the pain is the one who goes to the doctor. So the one, the plaintiff, who feels that he's been robbed, who feels that the other party is illegitimately holding his object, the plaintiff is the one in pain. He's got to go to the doctor. He's the one who's got to bring the evidence. Elach kra, lechaz Reb Nachman, the Gemara says, what you need the pasuk for? What do you need the pasuk for? That in a case, in a litigation, a plaintiff and a defendant, who speaks first? First of all, we learn from another pasuk that the Beis Din is forbidden from hearing one side's argument not in the presence of the other side. The halacha is, you're not allowed to hear one side without the other side. Why? Because a person is more brazen if their adversary is not there. If their opponent is there, they're going to be much more careful not to exaggerate and to be accurate with how they convey all the details. But in the absence of the other party, they might be more liberal with how they tell the story. So the halacha is that the judges are forbidden from hearing one side until the other side is present. And when the two sides are present, who gets to go first? Maybe the defendant should make his argument first about why the plaintiff is off his rocker and out of his mind, and why this isn't even a case that deserves to be heard. Maybe the defendant should go first. That's what the Gemara says. No, since we no longer need the pasuk to teach me amotzi mechaveru alav araya, we've rejected the idea that I need the pasuk to teach me that the plaintiff has to bring the evidence. So then what is the pasuk teaching me? What it's teaching me is the plaintiff goes first. When the Beis Din opens the trial, the litigation, the plaintiff goes first. Shenemar mi ba'dvarim yigash aleihem, yagish adorim aleihem. Amar naradoi, pa'amim sheniskakim nit batchila ve'ech idame deka zili nechse. There are times the defendant goes first. When the defendant has a countersuit, and the defendant's property or assets are depreciating, and while he's waiting for the plaintiff to make his argument, he's going to lose the opportunity to liquidate his assets. So in such a case where the defendant has a countersuit, then we would let the defendant go first. But we learn from this pasuk ultimately that ordinarily in a trial, in a Beis Din, in a Din Torah, it is the plaintiff who goes first. That's what the pasuk's for. So the Gemara said, Lama likra, svara. What do I need a pasuk? It's a svara. And we asked last week, what's the svara? And if you remember what we answered? I should just prepare one shiur and give it every single week. The whole zman will save me so much time, and I will know that shiur so well. I'm just joking. I'm not holding you accountable. I also don't remember what we said last week. So what was the svara we said last week? If you don't remember it from last week, so think of it right now. What's the svara? What's the svara? What's the logic? Why should... Oh, so the logic we said last week is, what kind of society and what kind of world do we have if... I can walk up, I like your watch, I want your watch, so I go to a Beis Din and I say, you're wearing my watch. And if the burden is now on you to prove that the watch you're wearing belongs to you, what kind of world do we have? You're going to have to hold the receipt and the document and the contract and the argument. You know, how am I going to prove anything? So just logically, you cannot build a society where anyone can falsely accuse. It's a very, very compelling logical argument that whoever's trying to extract from the other, the burden of proof is on them. Now again, if there's proof, of course they can extract. So if you're wearing a watch, and I can bring two witnesses it's my watch, or paperwork that it's my watch, I get the watch. Beis Din will take the watch from you. Where we apply the principle of muchzak, or motzi mechaveru alav araya, when do we say that the plaintiff bears the burden of proof? When it's doubt, when there's suffix, when we're unsure of to who actually owns it. In fact, we say so far, if you remember we said last week, so far we're still reviewing last week. What happens in the case of, I understand bari v'bari or shema v'shema. I understand if you say, look, your watch looks a lot like mine. It might be my watch, it might be your watch, I'm not sure. And I say, you know, you're right, I remember you had a watch like that. And I don't remember, maybe I'm wearing your watch, maybe I picked it up from the table thinking it was mine, it's yours. And both parties are shema v'shema. Neither party has confidence in their claim. So I understand that Beis Din says the burden of proof is on the plaintiff. Or, bari v'bari. I say, that's my watch. I can't believe you're wearing it. And you see with equal certainty, no, that's my watch. What are you talking about? Again, I understand that. Motzei mechaveru alav araya. But what happens if I say, you're wearing my watch? And the person with the watch says, you know, efshir, it's possible. We had similar looking watches. Maybe I picked up your watch. So maybe you should say, bari v'shema, since I have certainty in my argument. I don't have proof. I don't have witnesses. I don't have records. But I'm making a confident claim. I'm a bari. So maybe in a bari v'shema, maybe my confidence in my claim should reverse. And now the burden of proof is on you, since you were a shema. Since even though you're muchzak, even though you have possession, but your combination of possession with a flimsy claim, maybe my confidence in my claim should negate your possession, and now the burden should be on you. The Gemara says, no, even a bari v'shema, a motza mechadero. Muchzak is so strong, possession is so strong, that barring outside evidence, even if there's a inconsistent confidence in the claims, still bari v'shema, muchzak is stronger, possession is all powerful. The Gemara, we gave another example of the Mishnah in Bab Metzia, and the Gemara there, you have a home with two floors, and the home collapses, and the Gemara says, well, why don't we go look and see? Let's see where the bricks and where the shingles landed, and who's chatzer, who owns the courtyard, and amotzim mechaver ol avaraya, and the other party will bear the burden of proving it belongs to them. That was a second example of this principle of muchzak and amotzim mechaver ol avaraya. Possession is the law. If I own it, it is mine. You bear the burden of proof if you want to extract it and take it. Is that principle d'oraisa d'rabbanan? Hamotzi mecha l'varaya. D'oraisa d'rabbanan. What is the source of that principle? So we saw Kuntras Ishiurim, Rav Gustman, in source on page 4. Rav Gustman, in his introduction to his Kuntras Ishiurim, Abab Metzia, has a list. He gives a whole background. We read his whole Hakdama here. And he says, where I put the asterisk, that all these dinim are d'oraisa. When do you say, when both are muchzak, when one is muchzak, when the other doesn't know? These dinim, these laws are d'oraisa. So the notion that possession is the law is a din d'oraisa, is a biblical law, which also makes sense given that the Gemara said, lama likra svarahu. I don't need a pasuk. Why don't I need a pasuk? It is a svarah. Where do we have that idea, lama likra svarahu? We see it in two places. So I alluded last week to a kliyakar, and I want to read it to you. About the conversation, it's not in your source sheets, the conversation between Kayin and Hashem. What happens? Kadosh Baruch Hu accepts Hevel's korban, his sacrifice, he rejects the sacrifice of Kayin. Kayin gets a little bit upset. The pasuk describes, Vayomer Kayin al Hevel achiv. Kayin tells his brother, Vayibi yosam besada, Vayakam Kayin al Hevel achiv, Vayargeyu. What did he say to his brother? We have no idea. So you're right, Rashi says, Nichmasim abedivrei riv. What it means that he spoke to his brother was he started up with his brother. He instigated with his brother. They had words. They exchanged words. We'll describe a fight. We'll describe a conflict. We say two parties exchanged words. So that's what the pasuk said. Others suggest that why did it end up in violence? Because they couldn't communicate. Vayomer Kayin al Hevel achiv, there's no conversation. They didn't communicate effectively. When you don't communicate effectively with your words, if you have young children, as I still do, you sometimes find yourself saying to them, use your words, not your hands. So Kayin didn't learn that lesson, use your words, not your hands. Vayakam Kayin, Kayin rises and kills his brother. And Vayomar Hashem HaKayin, Ehev al Achicha. So Kayin says, Nu, where's your brother? Hashem says to Kayin, Nu, where's your brother? Vayomar Lo Yadati, I have no clue. Shomer Achia Nochi, what am I, my brother's keeper? Vayomar Me'asisa, what did you do? Kol Me'achecha Tzuaki Me'lai Min Adama. Your brother's voice is calling. And we said, what kind of bizarre conversation? The Almighty, Infinite, Omnipotent God is asking Kayin, where's your brother? And Kayin doesn't know that he's an infinite, omnipotent, all-perfect, all-knowing God who knows exactly where his brother is. What is Hashem asking? And what is Kayin answering? And what's going on in this conversation? Zokta Kliyakar. Pliya Gedola Kayin. Eich Amar Lo Yadati. It's wondrous. What a kasha on Kayin. What does he think he's going to get away with? I don't know. In Tob is Lomar Lo Yira. Of course Kayin understood that Hashem was challenging him about the murder of Hevel. When Kayin said, I don't know, what am I, my brother's keeper? He wasn't saying literally, I don't know. He knows he can't get away with telling God, don't know, I'm not sure. Did you look in the gym? Says the Kliyaka, what Kayin was saying is, Lo Yadati, I had no clue I wasn't allowed to murder. What do you mean you're coming to me and saying, hey, where's your brother Hevel? He says, Lo Yadati, oh my goodness, are you looking for Hevel? He's dead. I didn't know that I'm not allowed to kill him. Hashomer Achi, Eino Loshem Tamiya, Elamusav Al Lo Yadati. Hashomer Achi Anochi says, we always read it, Hashomer Achi Anochi? What am I, my brother's keeper? Kliyakar says, don't read it with a question mark. Hashomer Achi Anochi, what am I, my brother's keeper? Read it. Hashomer Achi Anochi, I'm not my brother's keeper. Lo Yadati, where does it say I wasn't allowed to kill my brother? Ki Amar Lo Yadati, Mani Mechuyiv Lishmer Ez Rosh Achi Shlo Yaga Yadi. Ushmir Zemi Lashon Aches Nafsho Shmor. Kach Ton Kayin, Ki Lo Yodim U Mechuyiv Lishmer Ez Rosh Achiv Olo. Kayin's argument, if you were Kayin's attorney, your defense would be, no, show me where it says you're not allowed to murder. Show me. You plopped Kayin and Hevel down in the world, took him out of Gan Eden, you gave some rules. Where does it say you're not allowed to murder? That's Kayin's argument. Lo yadati Hashem Rachi Anochi. I didn't know that I'm my brother's keeper. Not lo yadati, don't know, am I my brother's keeper? No, lo yadati, I didn't know that Hashem Arachia Anochi. How was I meant to know that I'm supposed to protect my brother, that I'm not allowed to kill him? So what's Hashem's answer now? What do I look like? I was born yesterday. How can you say you didn't know? This is not a mitzvah that needs to be written down. This is a mitzvah sichli. It's a mitzvah min hamuskalos. V'zeu shenemar kol dmei achecha tzoakim elai min ha'adama. Even without an explicit pasuk, what does it mean, min ha'adama? Your brother's voice is crying out to me from the earth. Why from the earth? Maybe his brother's voice should be calling out from the heavens, says the Kli Yakar. Because min ha'adama means material, earthly, physical. It's logical. Even a logical, physical being knows you can't kill someone else. Ki bebat l'ish Yisrael chayim b'la'o. Mishnah Novos. Because if there's no rule of law, if people can murder one another, you'll destroy the whole world. The fulfillment of creation, the world can only exist and spin on its axis. Earth can only be sustained and balanced if people don't kill one another. If people kill one another, you destroy Mother Earth. There's no purpose to life. There's no purpose to the world. So says the Kli Yakar, that's what it means. Your brother's blood is calling me min ha'adama. This is an adama. You don't need a pasuk. A pasuk, the Torah tells you the Shamayim laws. This is a law from the adama. This is a law that's logical. It's rational. Kain, you don't need a pasuk. You should have known it on your own. And so on and so forth. It's a longer Kli Yakar. He goes into it. What the Kli Yakar is essentially saying is, what did God say to Kayin? Lama likra svarahu. What do you need a mitzvah? What do you need a pasuk? It's a svara. So maybe this Kli Yakar is the source of this concept. Now, because I would have said, okay, so it's also a svara, but what's so bad about having a pasuk? Okay, so it's logical. You could have come to the conclusion logically. But what's so bad about also being able to see it from a pasuk? Torah is saying, no, sometimes you don't need the pasuk. When you can understand it more logically and rationally, then we don't waste space, real estate in the Torah. So we began this inside of Rav Asher Weiss. Oh, okay, good, good. The Sheva Mitzvahs Nei Noach were already given. So right, if you hold they were given, so then murder was already given. So how could the Kli Yakar say that? Okay, page 5. We started this piece from Rav Asher Weiss last week. This is where we pick up. Minchas Asher. So Rav Asher is on Parshas Ekev. Why is this on Parshas Ekev, Minchas Asher? What appears in Parshas Ekev? V'yachalta v'savata v'irachta, the halacha that you have to bench. Not only Doraisa, you have an obligation to bench. Say for Achinach writes, we have two brachas which are Doraisa, Birchas HaTorah and benching, which some, the Stipler understands, both are a Birchas HaNenin. You have to make a bracha on delicious food, and you have to make a bracha when you consume delicious Torah. One is after you eat the food, the other is before you consume the Divrei Torah. That is for another time. So in this context, Rav Asher Weiss deals with the following. How do we know you have to make a bracha, not birchas hamazon? The benching that you do after you eat, that's Doraisa, according to most. That's Doraisa, according to everyone, that's Doraisa, according to everyone. What about the bracha Rishona? So if you consumed our delicious cookies over there, hopefully you made a mizonos. If you had some of the soda or water, you made a shahakol. Coffee, had a shahakol. If you had some fruit, you made a haetz. So, you made a bracha before you ate. Is that Doraisa Durabanan? So it's Durabanan, yet, where do we know it from? It's a svara. Can you walk out of Publix and take food without paying? No, you're a thief. So you can't take food from Hashem's world without paying. And what is the currency with which we pay Hashem? Not the mighty dollar, but a bracha. So it's a svara. It's a svara. V'tzorachi in the second paragraph. We have two places in Shas. One we just read in Baba Kama, where the Gemara asks, why do I have a pasuk? It's logical. Ksuvus lagabe apeshas or pesha hitir, and babakam lagabe motzmecha velavaraya. Harelon tzvara doraisa meachad the maskanas asugid yechasanen tzvari lama lava doraisa. So if the two places where the Gemara says, what do I need a pasuk? It's logical. And Rav Asher says, the two places where we say, what do I need a pasuk? It's logical, conclude that the logic even dictates dinam d'oraisa, creates biblical laws. So why is Birchas Hanenin d'Rabbanan, if I'm learning it from a Svara, Birchas Hanenin should be, what? D'oraisa. This is already dealt with in the Pnei Yeshua. We saw it addressed by Rav Gustman in the introduction to his Kuntres Hashir. Hold the thought for 1 second. Skip the parentheses. Turn the page. Mikom makom bahani treis sugis b'ksuvas babakama chazin and diesh b'koach hasvar l'chadish din mea Torah. We see that in these two dinim, whether it's hamotzei mechaver or lavaraya, our sugya that possession is the law, or a pesha asar pesha hitir, another sugya maybe we'll do as a shas sugya in the next few weeks, is also a din d'oraisa. So why isn't Birchas Hanenin? V'nir l'chalik ben svar sichlish shel higyon saruf begidrei hadin ha'mischayvim min ha'hegyo mea Torah heim. So says Rav Asher Weiss the following. He says, we should distinguish between a logical argument that is trying to introduce a new law versus a logical argument that's trying to define an existing law. So he says, the notion that you can't benefit from this world without making a bracha, it's a nice schmooze. When I say it to you, you say that makes sense. But it's not as absolutely logical that whoever, whatever you have possession of, belongs to you. Says Rav Asher's second argument is, maybe the umbrella, maybe the idea that you should make a bracha before you eat, that's svara, maybe that should be doraisa. But maybe the details are derabanan. So how do you know you have to make a mezonos and a shahakol and a eitz? Maybe there's just one uniform, universal bracha for everything. And how do I know I have to make a bracha every time I eat? Maybe I just make one bracha. Aleza patur ve'mivarech lefanel l'acharea. Do you make a bracha before? Do you make it after? Shema bracha achas b'chol yom sagi. My wife's babi, her grandmother, Zichrona Levracha. She had a mesorah in her family from Europe. I'm not making a halachic commentary on it, but it was her practice. She would wash in the morning and eat breakfast, nibble the whole day, and bench after dinner at night. And that was it for her brachas of the day. I don't know how she got to mea brachas b'chol yom. I don't know how she got to 100 brachas a day. But her minhag was, you wash in the morning and you make hamotzi, you bench after dinner at night, and you're covered with your brachas for the day. So, again, I'm not offering halachic editorial on it. I'm just sharing her practice. So says Rav Asher Weiss, maybe the svara that you need to make a bracha, don't benefit from the world without making a bracha, maybe the overall svara, the overarching svara, maybe is from Hashem. How do you know the details? Is the bracha before? Is it after? Maybe one a day? Maybe you don't have separate brachas for each thing? The person who's benefiting has to acknowledge and thank the one who created it. So maybe you just once say, thank you Hashem for creating trees. Thanks for making vegetables. Thanks for making cows. So says Rav Asher, maybe we can answer by saying that the truth is the principle that you can't benefit from the world without a bracha. Maybe that svara creates the doraisa, but the application or the implementation of it, when, where, what, how, all of that is derabanan. Venira od, says Rav Asher, another argument. So Rav Asher says, here's another answer. And I like this answer. He says, once the Torah was given to the Jewish people at Har Sinai, a svara, a rational, logical argument, cannot introduce or create or add another din. Torah's fixed. 613 mitzvos are fixed. There's no 614th. That's Baal Tosef. It's not just 612. That's Baal Tigra. We have 613 mitzvos. Once the Torah was given at Sinai, the number, the list is fixed. And you might have in 2019, Tav Shanayin Tess, you decide you have a Svara, you come in front of the Sanhedrin, you come in front of Beis Din, you make a post all over the internet and you say, my Svara leads me to introduce a new din. I have a new chap, a new halacha, a new mitzvah. You know what we tell you? Get lost. We're not interested. There's no new mitzvahs. I don't care if you're the smartest, you have the highest IQ. I don't care if your logic is beyond compelling. Once the list of mitzvahs is fixed, it's fixed. So what can the Svara do? Svara can't introduce a new mitzvah. A Svara, what it can do is tell us a detail within the existing mitzvah. And that's what he's saying. The Svara of Peshehitir, or the Svara of Amatz Mechav Lavaraya, is not teaching me a mitzvah. The Svara of Asa Lahanas Melamud Zebul Bracha, that's introducing a new practice, a new mitzvah, a new halacha, a new hanaga. So that can only be done on a Dirabanan level. On a Diraisa level, biblically, we're fixed at 613 once we walked away from Har Sinai. Dirabanan, we can start adding on a few more. So what about Pesha Asa Pesha Hitir and Mutzah Mechavar Lavaraya? It's not introducing a new mitzvah. What's it introducing? New principles and protocols about how to regulate and legislate and adjudicate between conflicts. So I have a halacha, I have dinei mamonos, I have dinim. I have rules of adjudication. When there's a financial dispute, how do I know? What's evidence? Who has possession? What do I do in different circumstances? Svara dictates, hamotza mechavero alav haraya. V'nei matzina tishrichas domi mimin havero shebein hen amru yarav yayavor v'sanhedrin amru svarahi. Murder is one of the big three cardinal sins. And the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, murder. Do I need a pasuk for murder? So it's like the Kliyakar. The Gemara has a Svara. Machazes de dama didach sumak tvei. What's to say that your blood is redder than another? So someone puts a gun to your head and says, Ipasa b'chalav, or I'm going to pull the trigger. What are you supposed to do? Ipasa b'chalav. Someone says, where's shatnez, or I'm pulling the trigger. What are you supposed to do? Gladly put on the shatnez. Someone puts a gun to your head and says, kill the other person or I kill you. What are you supposed to say? Pull the trigger. There's nothing I can do. My blood is not redder or thicker than his. I'm not entitled to life more than the other person. So you see, they've established a din d'oraisa, a biblical law, that murder is forbidden based on the svara, the logic of one person's blood is not redder than another, thicker than another, from logic. Says Rav Asher, I can explain it based on both of my previous answers. Because they're not establishing a new mitzvah. The idea of Yahari V'Yavor is not a new mitzvah, it's a new din. There's a prohibition of murder. What do I do though if there's a conflict? Should I murder to save my life? Should I die rather than murder? So Svara now leads me to a detail within the existing din. But it's not introducing a new mitzvah altogether. If you want to understand the parameters of when we use logic, and how far logic can go in introducing a new law, the Gabi Masha Amru, Iboy Se Makra, Iboy Se Misvara. Sometimes the Gemara says, namely these two places, Lamali Kras Svarahi, why do I need a pasuk? It's logical. But elsewhere the Gemara says, Iboy Se Makra, Iboy Se Misvara. How do you know this law? I could quote you a pasuk or I can give you an argument. Shikshu Mehadik Subas, Lamali Kras Svarahi, Vitirtu Yesh Chalak Yesh Dvarm Shein Svar Pshuta Kokach. So Tosfos, how does Tosfos resolve it? Tosfos says, not every Svara was created equal. Not every logical argument is equally compelling. So when the Svara is overwhelmingly compelling, when it's a great Svara, I don't need the Pasuk. That's why I disregard the Pasuk altogether. But when the Svara is not overly compelling, then it needs to be complemented by a Pasuk. So when the Gemara says, Lamali Kras Svarahi, what do I need a Pasuk? It's a Svara. It means that Svara is incredibly compelling. And when the Gemara says, Yiboy Zema Kra, Yiboy Zema Svara, I can give you either. It means that it's the combination of the two which establishes the din. Shuv Reisi Shepnei Yeshua, he says, I saw the Pnei Yeshua says, in fact, Birchas Hanen in Adir Raisa. The details of Birchas Hanen in Adir Abonon, but Birchas Hanen in overall are Adir Raisa. Okay, so far we saw there's a din of Muchsuk. There's a din of Hamotzeh Mechaveru Lavaraya. Possession is the law. The plaintiff wants to extract money, even in a case of Shema Ubari. Even if the Mufzak, even if the one with possession has uncertainty with regard to his claim, and the one seeking to extract it has confidence and certainty, even in that scenario, nevertheless, Motza Mechaver Olav Araya, possession is the law. When do we use the rule of possession as the law? When do we apply a Motza Mechaver Olav Araya? So in Shiurei HaRav, in Rav Soloveitchik's Shiurim on Gittin, we're on page 7 in the source sheet, he gives us a little insight. Isa B'Gemara, the Gemara there in Gittin has the following. Hechi Dami Mechza Mechza. The Mishnah says that if the husband throws the get to the wife, if it lands in her 4 amos, she takes possession, she's divorced. If it lands in his 4 amos, he has a bad arm, he won't be picked up by any Major League Baseball teams, so then they're not divorced because it never entered her property. What happens if it's Mechza Mechza, half and half? So the Gemara says, what's half and half? Because they're overlapping in the same 4 cubits. They're in the same 6 feet. So when she has her 4 amos, and her 4 amos are clear of his 4 amos, and he has his 4 amos are clear of hers, and he throws her the get, so now we measure. Are they in her, right? Let's say the 4 amos are touching. His 4 amos and her 4 amos are touching. So if they're in her 4 amos, they're divorced. They're in his 4 amos and they never got there, they're still married, unhappily. So what happens if it's mechza mechza? So what was the example? So the Gemara explains. The example is, now draw a circle, they're both in the same 4 amos, and he throws it to her, and it lands on the ground. Are they divorced? Well, on the one hand, you could say, it's her 4 amos, she's standing in it. So her 4 amos should take possession for her. But on the other hand, you're going to say, she shares those 4 amos. They're also the 4 amos for him. So they're still in his possession. They never left his possession. So they're not divorced. What we have here is a intrinsic contradiction. On the one hand, she's divorced. Why? Her 4 amos has taken possession of the get. On the other hand, they're still married. Why? Because the get never left his possession. They're in his 4 amos. So what do we do? We have a suffik al pidin. There's a suffik. Who are they divorced? Are they not divorced? Meaning, you can make an equally compelling argument in either direction about whether they're divorced or not.
But she has a cheskis
and she's seeing. Okay. So the Mishnah's conclusion is, what's the halach in such a scenario? Migureshes ve'enu migureshes. You know, they say you can't be half pregnant. Can you be half divorced? The ksuba, that if he gives the get, he has to pay the ksuba. Good. Hold off. We're not learning getting right now. Let's just get through this piece. Good question. It's a good question. So what does it mean to be migureshes ve'ena migureshes? She yesh l'lios migureshes, v'yesh l'lios ena migureshes. It really, one can make the argument for both. The Mishnah is saying we actually treat her with the stringencies of both. So at the moment, she's not, let's say he's a kohen, she can't eat his truma, because we'll treat her like she's divorced. On the other hand, she can't remarry because we'll treat her like she's still married. Because the scenario is a tarte de sasre, because there's an internal contradiction, a suffix in the din, you can make an argument in both directions. Who has the get? Him or her? Is she divorced or not? Therefore, we treat her with the stringencies of both. Sometimes the Rav is pointing out, you have a suffix al pi din. In other words, is this a suffik in Metzias or a suffik al pi din? Sometimes you have a suffik in Metzias. What's a suffik in Metzias? It means I don't have all the facts. So it's a suffik, I'm in a case of doubt. And what is the source of my doubt? Source of my doubt is not judicial, it's not halachic. Source of my doubt is not that I don't know the status, I don't know the law. The source of my doubt is I don't know the Metzias. I don't know the facts, the details, the circumstances. Points out the Rav, these are scenarios like this case where it's suffik api din. V'lodami legetshu mechza b'shuso mechza b'shuso davi agida gabei v'agida v'ena megureshes klal. What happens if their 2 dalet amos are adjacent and the get lands right on top? So half the get's in her possession, half the get's in his possession. What's the halacha then? So the Rav points out, the halacha there is, you're not Megureshes at all. She's fully married. Why she's fully married, doesn't have to get in her property? The answer is she's only Megureshes when the whole get is in her property. So when their two Dalet Amoses are adjacent and the get falls right on top of the boundary between the two, half and half, you don't say she's half divorced. You say she's zero divorced. Why? Because in order to be divorced, the entire get has to be in her possession. But when the two are standing within the same circle of four Amos, so it's both in his possession and in her possession simultaneously. The get has both not been given and been given at the same time. So it's a suffik al pi din. There's no question of the metzias. It's a question of the din.
Does the intent
No. Well, the intention is for him to give it to her. Intent doesn't matter. Clearly her intention is to give it to her, and her intention is to receive it. But what's the din? Did she receive it or not? Tekanu kulo b'shusa v'kulo b'shusa. In other words, in the case where it's in half and half, so it's entirely in him. Because until it's entirely in her possession, it's entirely in his possession. So there she's entirely married. But in the case where it's in both of their possession, it's both in her possession and in his possession, so they're both married and divorced at the same time. It's a great riddle. Go home and ask someone. How can you both be married and divorced at the same time? And the answer is, when he throws a get at her and it lands, and they're both standing in the same Dalet Amos.
Obviously, that he didn't want to give her the get because he knew that
he could have handed. No, he wanted to give it to her.
Nobody. He could have given it to
no,
her.
No, no, he wanted there. To give it to her, but he's so repulsed by her, he refuses to even hand her something. He's so repulsed by her.
No, it doesn't make a difference.
No, that's a balabat. Come on, Phil, you're better than that.
No, I'm seriously.
We're trying to establish the halacha.
He knows that if he puts on the floor, it's
no, no, he throws it at her. He's on the edge of the Dalet Amos. She's on the other edge of the Dalet Amos. He won't come any closer to her. He might get the cooties from her. He can't even stand to be in her presence. He throws the get at her. She has a terrible, she can't catch. And it lands right there in front of her. And now it's in both. Now let's see what he says. V'alpiza yesh levar. The Gam Mashikos of Gemara, the Kaman Alibid Rabbi Yochanan Shleim Yechon, the Shomer Shleim Ein Yechon Zeh Mechza Mechza, Shem Shleim Yechon Lishmor Amir Mishaged Lagamei Tachash Mirasa Yishlius Megurashas. The Rav gives another example based on a later Gemara. I don't want to get caught up in the details of Gittin. We're trying to get back to Amotze Mechavero. So the next paragraph, Apizem Mevarim Divrei Atesus the Kaman. Diisa Shem Begemara Vechen Lini Nachov. We have it in another case. Let's say there's a creditor and a debtor. Are those opposites? Let's say somebody owes money and the other person is the one who lent the money. So I owe Phil Zimmerman money. Phil knows me since I'm a little kid. He's kind enough to lend me a few shekel. So I'm near Phil, but I got to run. We're overlapping. Phil's going to set up a shiva house because he's such a mitzvah man, and I got to run to go give a shiur. So I can't afford the time to come up to him and hand him the money. So what I do is I throw him the $100 bill. I say, Phil, here's your $100 bill.
Where is it?
This is a hypothetical scenario. A purely hypothetical scenario. Phil actually lived across the street from me growing up, across Sussex Road and Teaneck. So I throw him the $100 across the street, Teaneck, Sussex Road. Linyan achov zrokli chovi. Phil says, throw me my $100. Uzarkulo. And now I throw him the $100. Karav lamalva zachalova. If the $100 lands closer to Phil, I have discharged my debt. The debt is now fully paid. Why don't we just say, did Phil get the $100? Because what happens? I throw it towards Phil across Sussex Road, and a car comes flying by in Sussex Road, and the $100 goes in the window, and now is on Route 4 with the car heading towards the mountains. We never see it again. So do I still owe Phil the $100? I throw it to Phil, it lands on the floor, and a bird swoops down and picks it up and flies off with it. Do we say, till it's in his hand, I still owe him the money? Or do we say that once Phil was the one who told me, throw the money, why should I still owe it to him? He said, make a paper airplane out of the $100 bill, throw it across Sussex Road. I made the paper airplane, and it was a good one. I had a lot of practice in Yavin Academy. I threw it at Phil. It went across Sussex Road. It landed, and the bird picked it up and flew off with it. So do I owe him another $100 or not? So what does the Gemara say there? If Karov Lalo, if it's Karov Lamalva, if it's closer to Phil, hello. So Zachalova, I'm done. I paid the $100. Tough noogies, Phil. You lost $100. Karov Lalova, if my paper airplane was not very aerodynamic, and it lands closer to me, so Halova Chayev. What happens? Mechza al Mechza. We take out the ruler. We shut down Sussex Road, and we take out the ruler, and it landed exactly halfway between 1132 Sussex Road and Phil. What was your address? Phil, what was your address in Sussex? You remember it? 1095.
I can't give it to you.
Halfway between 1095, I'll tell you a word. Okay, halfway between 1095 and 1132, they measure it, it's exactly halfway. What's the din? Yachloku. Kosva Tosvos, Hacha lo shayach lomar, Hamotza Michal ve'lavaraya. Whoa! Why don't we say Hamotza Michal ve'lavaraya? If it's halfway, so who should... So who's the Mochzak here? First of all, it's an interesting question. No. Who was the muhsak on having the $100 that the other is the motzei mechaver olav araya? What? The lova was the muhsak. We last know that the lova was holding the $100. Right? That's the last person we knew who had possession of the $100. It included a debt to the malva, but the last one was possession. So why don't we say that when it's mechza al mechza, it's halfway, and we don't know whose. So, a motzei mechaver olav araya. Whoever's trying to extract the money for the other one bears the burden of proof. Tosva says we don't say that. Oh, so keep reading. That's exactly the point. De'ein kan suffik. In other words, why should yachloku? Why should I have to give Phil another $50 because yachloku? I should tell Phil I'm not giving you anything. And if you want to prove I owe you $100, take me to a din Torah and bring a raya. I owe you $100. No, but I paid it back. I threw it at him. So if you're trying to be motzi another $100 from me, take me to Beis Din and bring a raya. I'm muchzak in my next $100. Phil's trying to get another $100 from me, right? What happened? I owe Phil $100, that we all agree. Phil says, hey Goldberg, throw the money across Sussex Road. I got to run. I throw it across Sussex Road, it lands exactly between our homes. If it landed closer to him, I'm done. Even if he never got the money, I no longer have the debt. If it landed closer to me, too bad, I tried to pay it once, I still owe him another $100. What if it lands exactly in between halfway? The Gemara says, Yachloku, split it. Not just for Sumchus, for everybody. Yachloku. What does Yachloku mean? I owe Phil another $50. I divide what we're arguing about. So Tosfos says on that, 1 second, why don't we say Amotza Michal Varaya? I'll take you to the RCBC Beis Din, or you're taking me to the RCBC Beis Din, and I say, Phil, you want me to pay $50? I'm paying $0. I already threw you $100. It landed halfway. That's not my problem. And the bird flew off with it. That's not my problem. I paid you the $100. If you want to extract from me another $50, bring a proof. Bring a proof. We don't say that. We say Yachloku.
What kind of proof?
Unclear, but why don't we say I'm in possession of my $50. When it landed exactly in between, you have no right to take my $50 unless you can make an argument why you deserve it. And when it lands exactly in between, you don't have an argument. So Tosfos says we don't say Amotzei Michal ve'lavaraya. Why? Ein kan suffik. Because there's no doubt in this scenario. V'nira shekavanasa mashikos ve'ein kan suffik hi. And we read this entire piece just to get to this punchline. Because I want to share with you, when do we say Amotzei Michal ve'lavaraya? Rabbi Soloveitchik argues, the Rav argues, that you apply Ein kan suffik hi she'ein kan suffik hanitin lebirur shu suffik al pi din. It's exactly what you're saying. The reason we don't apply a matzah mechaver al varaya, either in this case or the case of the get, where they're both in the same dalet amos, you don't say a matzah mechaver al varaya. When do you say matzah mechaver al varaya? When there is a raya to be had, when there's evidence to find and bring, then we'll say possession is the law till the other party has evidence in order to extract the money or the object. But when the din itself dictates that we don't know what to do, so then there is no possession. We consider the $50 I'm holding, I'm not in possession of. The mechza mechza that it landed halfway between our homes dictates that we have to split the difference. So there's no raya. Because Phil's going to look at me, Phil's going to take me to Beis Din and say, hey, it landed halfway between our houses, I'll tell you what, I'll split it with you. I told you to throw the $100. You threw it, it landed smack halfway. And then a bird flew off with it. So I'll tell you what, I'll split it with you. You give me 50 more. We'll both be out an extra 50.
No.
And I say to him, I'm not out 150. You know, we're both out 50. Right, we're both out 50. So I say, I'm not giving you 50, take me to a din Torah. He takes me to a din Torah, and the din Torah looks at Phil and says, Nu, what's your raya? And he says, what's my raya? What kind of raya? There's no raya to bring. So when there's no raya to bring, it's a suffik bedin, you don't say amotza mechaver levaraya. You say yachloku. No, the facts are perfectly clear. We know every fact in this case. So when there are unclear facts, That's when you say Amotzei Mechaver Levaraya. There's a suffix in the Metzias. Right. So I say it's my watch. You say it's your watch. Until I can bring you evidence in my watch, you're holding on to the watch means you get to keep the watch. But if the suffix is not in the Metzias, the suffix is Badin, then you don't say Amotzei Mechaver Levaraya, then you say Yachloku. Because they're not, as he says, Eino Nitan Labirur. There's a suffix Hanitan Labirur, and a suffix Sheino Nitan Labirur. The suffix about is she divorced or not, that you could explore this till the end of time, you'll never resolve it. It's not a resolvable suffix. It's just a halachic conundrum. The same is true when the $100 lands between my house and your house. When it's a solvable doubt, that's when we say Amotzei Mechaver Levaraya. Okay? Good. So the question that we have left to explore, oh, you give out, look at the time. We may still do this one more shot.
Isn't that the case of the calf as well?
The case of the calf and the... No, that's Nitan Levirur. That's Nitan Levirur. Oh, so what happens in the case where the ox gores the cow and Nebuch next to the cow is a little fetus and we don't know, did the fetus die before the goring or after the goring? Is that a suffix on Nitan Levirur or not?
Yeah.
Of course it is. Because maybe we'll find that Google Earth was taking a picture with its satellite camera right at the moment of the goring, and it's Nitan Labirur. Maybe there are two Adam hiding behind the fence, and it's Nitan Labirur. It's not an unresolvable doubt. It's a resolvable doubt. We just need to find more facts. So when you can find more facts, and it's in theory resolvable, then possession means I hold it until you find your facts. But when there's no more facts to be had, and it's a doubt that's created by the halachic dilemma or conundrum, then yachloku, then we have to split it. It's a great chap by the Rav in giving parameters of when you say Amotzei Mechavero, Olav Haraya. So we have left to address, which I'll give you for the next time, I'll give you a little preview of what we have left to address, are two questions. That's what we have left to address. Kind of three questions. Number one is, why don't we say Amotzei Mechavero, Olav Haraya is Safek Gezel? When I say to you, you're wearing my watch, and you say it's my watch, and Beis Din says you could keep wearing the watch till he can bring proof that it belongs to him. Why isn't the fact that I accuse you of wearing my watch enough to make perhaps the fact that you're keeping the watch that you might be Safek Gezel, you might be stealing? Maybe you should have to put the watch in escrow. Put the watch in escrow till one of us brings proof it belongs. So I understand that Motza Mechaver Levaraya, I can't take your watch away from you and give it to me until I have evidence it's my watch. But just the fact that I create the question, shouldn't that be enough that you have a problem that maybe it's Safek Gezel? Oh, we'll get to that. So that's question number one is, why isn't there an issue here of being Safek Gezel? We'll start with that next week. Question number two, this is the great one. This is the lumdus here. This is what you've been waiting for. When I say Hamotzei Mechaver Olav Haraya, which places the emphasis on the plaintiff, so let's put the emphasis on the defendant, namely Muchsak. Whoever's Muchsak is 9/10 of the law. Is that a din in Birur or a din in Hachra? What do I mean? When I say that possession is the law, am I saying possession is the law with certainty, that if you own it, you own it 100%? Or am I saying that Ein Hachanami, because you accused him of wearing your watch, now you own it with doubt, but I've got to come up with something to do, so I'll say you get to continue to hold it till he has proof. The fact that someone accuses you of having something that belongs to them, and if they lack evidence, they can't extract it from you, does that mean it's as if they never brought it up to begin with and you own it fully? Or does it mean that now there's a question of your ownership? We've created a rule. It's a hachra. The achra, the practice is, the hanhaga is, we let you still use it. We let you act as if you own it until we have reason to believe otherwise. So how do you view muhsak? Is muhsak a birur? That when you have possession, that alone is evidence. Is muhsak a birur? Or is muhsak a achra? That in the absence of evidence, we have to decide what to do, we let you keep it. What's a nafkamina, whether it's achra or birur? What's a nafkamina? You have to come back next week. I'm not going to tell you. But trust me, it's a nafkamina. You want to know what the difference is? That's what the nafkamina is. 3 o'clock. Actually, I'm not teaching next week. I may teach on Wednesday or Thursday instead. Rabbi Shabtai will let everyone know the schedule for next week. So I'll keep you in even further suspense. Is it achra or a birur? Is muhsak, hamotz mechaver olav haraya? Is it a din hanhaga or are we saying bebiro with certainty that that's the halacha? And the answer to that question, just to give you the third preview, the third bullet preview, the answer to that question is going to be based on why it works. Why does it work? You take me to Beis Din and you say, I'm wearing your watch. So Beis Din says to you, you have evidence, and you say, what do you want from me? I threw out the receipt 1,000 years ago when I got the watch, or I inherited the watch from my father, but I'm telling you, he's wearing my watch. So Beis Din says, I feel bad for you. Maybe the watch belonged to your great Zayda, but until you can prove it, we have to let Goldberg continue to wear the watch. Why? Why is the fact that I'm wearing the watch give me more evidence than you? What is it about the fact that I'm wearing it? Now, we said the Svara an hour ago of what kind of society do we live in? But I'll throw another wrench in. There are some scenarios where we say the following, and we'll see if we have time for this even next week. But I'll throw another third wrench in. What if we go to Beis Din, you say, I'm wearing your watch. Beis Din says, good, what's your proof? You say, what do you want from me? I have no proof, but I'm telling you Goldberg's wearing my watch. And I say, it's my watch, and I don't have proof either, but the default is muchzak. Motza mechaveh levaraya, whoever has possession gets it. Good. Then you come over on the way out of Beis Din, and you push me, and in the process of pushing me, you grab the watch off my hand. And now you're the muchzak. Now you have the watch. Will Beis Din say, give it back. Come on, you just stole it. He's the one who deserves the watch. You just stole it. So here's the interesting thing. In most scenarios and cases, Beis Din will say, if you take it away, you got to give it back. If you took it away, you got to give it back. However, there are some cases where Tofes, if you go take it from the other, now you became the muhzak. So how do you transfer who the muhzak is? How do you transfer who has possession? Whoever stronger, whoever bullies the other gets the possession? So when do you apply? So when do you apply whoever bullies the other and grabs the object? When do you say a toface, whoever has it can keep it? And when do you say toface, that if you grabbed it, you got to give it back? And the answer to that question of when you say it, when you don't say it, might tell you everything you want to know about why muhzak works to begin with. Stay tuned. Rabbi Shaket. Unbelievable, huh? All right, everybody. Have a great day. Again, chaydesh.